a Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Welcome, everyone. I'm Lori Boyer, your host. Coming up in the show today, Taylor Charlstrom will have a Walnut Wednesday report talking about Chile's walnut production and how it's stacking up to that of the United States. And I'll have a check-in of national and regional agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission. Supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
According to the latest USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service California Crop Progress and Condition Report, average lows for California ranged from 43 to 72 degrees in the mountains last week, 47 to 70 along the coast, 54 to 94 in the desert, and 57 to 81 in the valley. Average highs for the state ranged from 60 to 105 degrees along the coast, 76 to 100 degrees in the mountains, 91 to 112 in the central valley, and 100 to 116 degrees in the desert. In the Sacramento Valley, some rice growers were growing hay in fields usually used for rice due to drought conditions. In the San Joaquin Valley, cotton bloom and boll setting continued. In the fruit crops, weed management and irrigation were taking place where necessary. Stone fruit harvest continued. Middle season varieties of peaches, nectarines, plums, and apricots were harvested. Table and raisin grape varieties were developing. Persimmon, kiwi fruit, Asian pear, and pomegranate size steadily increased. Tangerine and tangelo harvest was winding down. Grapefruit and lemon harvest progressed, and olives continued to develop. In the nut crops, insecticide spraying took place where necessary. Nut crops are looking good overall with some insect pressure. Almond hull split was ongoing with harvest quickly approaching. Some producers started their second hull split spray. Walnut and pistachio nut fill continued. Pistachio fertilization was still taking place. In the vegetable crops in Stanislaus County, some tomato fields began showing color. Processed tomato harvest began in the southern portion of the county. In Tulare County, lettuce, onions, tomatoes, cucumbers, eggplant, garlic, bell peppers, serrano peppers, summer squash, sweet corn, and tomatillos began being harvested and sold at local farmers' markets. Summer vegetable crops continue to be planted and developed well with warm temperatures. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced the U.S. Department of Agriculture plans to provide up to $200 million in assistance for specialty crop producers who incur eligible on-farm food safety program expenses to obtain or renew a food safety certification in calendar years 2022 or 2023. USDA's new food safety certification for specialty crops program will help to offset costs for specialty crop producers to comply with regulatory requirements and market-driven food safety certification requirements. Requirements, which are part of USDA's broader effort to transform the food system to create a more level playing field for small and medium producers and a more balanced, equitable economy for everyone working in food and agriculture. Specialty crop operations can apply for assistance for eligible expenses related to a 2022 food safety certificate issued on or after June 21st, now through January. USDA is delivering critical assistance for specialty crop operations with an emphasis on equity and program delivery while building on lessons learned from the COVID-19 pandemic and supply chain disruptions. To be eligible for assistance, the applicant must be a specialty crop operation, meet the definition of a small business or a very small business, and have paid eligible expenses related to the 2022 or 2023 certification. Specialty crop operations can receive assistance for developing a food safety plan for first-time food safety certification, maintaining or updating an existing food safety plan, food safety certification, certification upload fees, microbiological testing for products, soil amendments and water, and training. The application period for 2022 is now through January 31st of 2023, and the application period for 2023 will be announced at a later date. For more information, see your local Farm Service Agency office. California strawberries are just coming over the crest of peak supplies in its strong summer season, They've had a fairly good, excellent peak run of berries out of Watsonville that probably lasted 6 weeks of tremendous numbers, that according to Jim Grabowski of Well Picked. While the California strawberry industry as a whole saw an increase in acreage this season, the growth of the plants themselves was strong as well. The quality has been very good, and there were larger berries this season, he says. From here on in, production will start tapering down for the remainder of the season out of Watsonville by about 10%. But that means, for example, rather than picking 100,000 berries a day, they're picking maybe 90,000 berries a day. There's still going to be a lot of berries, he says, noting the berry sizing also may move down to a medium to larger sizing as well. That production will continue to widen down until the end of September, when Well Picked moves over to its summer fall crop out of Oxnard, California. While California is home to commercial strawberry production in the country right now, there are also local deals across the country for strawberries. As for demand, it's steady to good. It is probably the hardest time for us because we're competing against all the other summer fruit available. There are a lot of items in a produce department that customers can choose from, but strawberries are also still a summer fruit, according to Grabowski. And a recent shorter supplies of blueberries for the 4th of July weekend, a strong berry-associated holiday, could have helped boost demand for strawberries. If they didn't have blueberries to promote at the store level, then strawberries would be the natural item to take their place, according to Grabowski. Strawberries probably get a good play at this time of the year with lots of outdoor activities like picnics, barbecues, family gatherings, and etc. The holiday was also probably the last big hurrah for strawberries on holidays. As for pricing, it's been trending lower given strawberries are on the promotable side, though you're probably not seeing any super deals because transportation costs have gone up. This may be making a retail price is a little higher than people have seen in the past, but overall they're still a good deal for this time of the year, he says. Hazel Technologies Incorporated announces a successful trial on California-grown table grapes in conjunction with OPI, a global producer, grower, marketer, and distributor, and California-based grower, packer, shipper, Brar Farms. During and after testing, OPI quality personnel found that table grapes treated with Hazel Tech's flagship technology, Hazel 100, at Brar Farms, showed greener stems in all trial samples taken. The trial consisted of three tests on two California-grown varieties, Autumn Royal and Autumn King. Commercial scale samples of each variety were removed from cold storage and placed in ambient temperature storage to simulate retail conditions. At the 45-day mark, the Autumn King grapes protected by Hazel 100 saw 23% more green stems in a box, while the Hazel 100 protected Autumn Royal grapes saw 47% greener stems in the box. With Hazel 100, domestic growers, packers, shippers, and retailers are able to protect fresh table grape quality for longer and reduce losses. Hazel 100 is a USDA-funded patent time-release technology.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian Solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The global walnut market is shifting. Exports continue to grow, and the United States remains as the largest exporter, but new players such as China and Chile are becoming increasingly relevant. However, Chilean walnuts might not have to be seen as competition, and they could actually complement the U.S. walnut industry, according to Rabo AgriFinance senior tree nut and produce analyst David Magana.
Is the second most planted fruit in Chile over the last few years, just after sweet cherries. And sweet cherries is a success story that they had, sending counter-seasonal fresh cherries to China for the Chinese New Year. So walnuts are that relevant in Chile, just behind the sweet cherries in terms of plantings. So they are expecting to continue to grow in terms of production and exports. And they are targeting some of the same markets as U.S. walnuts, particularly in Europe. And they have been growing, sending more to India and other markets. So definitely has been growing and will continue to grow in the next few years.
Even though the market for U.S. walnut products continues to grow, the actual acreage grown in the United States is expected to stay relatively flat over the next few years. Current prices are unlikely to provide enough incentive for further acreage expansion or reduction, while regulations and cost increases will continue to pressure margins. In the coming years, the transition to higher value cultivars and to regions with relatively better access to water will gradually continue.
Obviously, some walnut growers will remain walnut growers in some areas, so they continue to replant walnuts. But going forward, we see the bearing acreage of walnuts in California growing only marginally, given all the current challenges, like the walnut industry has been impacted by logistic bottlenecks, obviously by the increase in production costs. So we don't see strong incentives either to aggressively plant more walnuts in California, but also not the strong incentives also to pull out orchards in many regions. So we will see probably the trend of maturing that will continue in the next few years. And that will be met with increasing competition in the international market, as I said, particularly from Chile and China. And one opportunity that I see from this increasing availability coming from Chile during the counters, during the U.S. off season, is the potential to create this year-round demand in key markets such as Europe. I definitely see that as an opportunity, as many consumers continue to see walnuts mainly as a baking or cooking ingredient. And some consumers still buy walnuts mainly during the holiday season. So this more consistent availability has this potential to create year-round demand that will potentially benefit the industry as a whole.
Magaña said that other commodities within the ag industry have had success with year-round production, using avocados as an example.
Just 25 years ago in the U.S., we had mainly avocados coming from California during the summer, and then avocados coming from Chile during the off-season. And Mexican avocados were not allowed in the U.S. market because of some sanitary reasons, and also because they kind of were trying to keep some competition out of the U.S. market. But what we've been observing over the last two decades, particularly over the last decade, is that this consistent supply of avocados have attracted more consumers, and also more restaurants are including avocados in their menu items because they know they will get avocados year-round. So I see this more consistent availability of walnuts in year-round, good quality walnuts in some markets such as Europe, to have this potential as well.
At the end of the day, competition from increasingly good quality Chilean walnut exports is primarily indirect for the United States industry. In fact, Chile's industry has the potential to develop counter-seasonal demand in key markets, which could be beneficial for the global walnut industry. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, working together to advance the industry. Together, we can do more.
The U.S. International Trade Commission has ruled against imposing tariffs on nitrogen fertilizers imported from Russia, Trinidad, and Tobago. The decision comes after CF Industries filed a petition with ITC in late 2021 requesting that the commission place tariffs on urea ammonium nitrate used in liquid fertilizers. Shortages and prices have since increased exponentially, and few inputs have exhibited more price inflation than UAN, which has experienced a high price increase due largely to the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Last month, agriculture groups asked ITC to take into consideration the price pressure experienced by commodity farmers has cascading effects that reverberate through the farm economy. While public agricultural research and development funding in the United States has trended downward in recent decades, several other major trading partners have increased their funding. USAID's Economic Research Service reported this week that China leads the world in agricultural research and development funding. The European Union's expenditures have grown since 2000, as have the expenditures in India and Brazil. However, none experienced as rapid an increase as China, which became the largest funder of agricultural R&D after 2011. Surpassing the European Union. By 2015, the last year for which the Economic Research Service has full data, China was spending more than $10 billion annually on agricultural R&D. That level of spending was roughly twice the U.S. expenditures in 2015 and nearly quintuple that of China's own R&D spending in 2000. With China as a major importer of U.S. agricultural goods and Brazil a competitor to the U.S., these developments could impact U.S. export competitiveness. The Department of Agriculture says the second funding pool through the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities Opportunity has received over 600 applications from over 400 groups. While USA is in the process of calculating a total requested amount for the second funding pool, the overall interest in the opportunity already exceeds more than $18 billion. Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Robert Bonney says the results of the second funding pool clearly demonstrate the strong demand in the U.S. agriculture and forestry industry for solutions that expand markets for American producers. The second funding pool, which closed on Friday, June 10th, includes proposals from $250,000 to $5 million that emphasize the enrollment of small and or underserved producers and or monitoring, reporting, or verification activities developed at minority-serving institutions. First-round proposals requested more than $18 billion and offered to match more than $8 billion in non-federal dollars. The submissions are currently being reviewed, and selections are anticipated after this summer. What are some of the authorities and programs granted to the U.S. Forest Service under the Farm Bill and its forestry title? And what does that look like on the ground level? USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Some may not realize the Farm Bill contains a forestry title, yet it authorizes various programs and operations utilized by the Agriculture Department through the U.S. Forest Service. And Forest Service Chief Randy Moore recently provided testimony to a House Agriculture Subcommittee as it begins crafting a 2023 Farm Bill and the forestry title within it.
My testimony will focus on the important role that the Farm Bill has played in providing authorities to carry out the agency's work, including with our partners to steward the nation's forests. Past farm bills have provided and expanded on various authorities that have given the agency and our partners critical tools for managing forests for many goods and services that they provide to the public. These tools have been instrumental in accomplishing our collective work on the ground.
So what are some of those authorities under the Farm Bill and forestry title? Chief Moore starts with Stewardship Contracting Authority, authorized under the 2014 Farm Bill, which
has promoted closer public-private working relationships by using the value of timber or other forest products to offset the cost of restoration activities. Over the past four fiscal years, use of this authority has resulted in over 500,000 acres of hazardous treatment in the wildland-urban interface, 750,000 tons of biomass for energy production, and nearly 400 miles of stream habitat restored for other services.
There is Good Neighbor Authority, which Congress permanently authorized also as part of the 2014 Farm Bill.
This authority allows the agency to more efficiently work with states to perform restoration on federal lands. And in 2018, Congress expanded GNA to include federally recognized Indian tribes and county governments, allowed funds received by the sale of timber sales to be used by the state to accomplish additional work under this authority.
Research has been covered via the Farm Bill with authorities such as Wood Innovation Grants. That authority
supports proposals that expand and accelerate wood products and wood energy markets to support managing the nation's forests. For instance, the program has helped catalyze U.S. growth in mass timber construction with over 1,400 buildings built or either under construction or in design, and the rate is accelerating each year.
And then there is the Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Program.
It allowed for the agency to issue a waiver to extend existing projects up to an additional 10 years. The authority has allowed us to build partnerships and involve communities in decision-making process.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Every year, the Strawberry Center at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo is home to more than 30 research projects. Growers, pest control advisors, and ancillary industry members will get a chance to learn about many of the projects at the center's 6th annual field day, July 28th, on the university campus. Strawberry Center Director Gerald Holmes said this year's event will last the morning and expose attendees to three main research areas: automation, insect control, and disease management.
The field day will start officially at 8:30 a.m. with a welcome, and then by 8:55 or so, we're going to be grouping everybody into four different groups, and they'll section off into those groups and go to different sites at the Strawberry Center. One area will deal with automation. We'll have about seven or eight stops there, robotic harvesting, a UVC unmanned vehicle for powdery mildew control, and a lot of other automation gadgets and machines. We'll have our entomology group in the courtyard. We'll have our pathology group out in the field. And each of the groups is going to rotate around these in about 20-minute intervals. It depends a little bit on which group you're in as to how fast that goes. Then there'll be about mid-morning, everybody switches so that every group has a chance to see all of the stations. And so that'll take us right up until lunch, which is at just a little after noon.
Holmes said the field day is designed for those with a serious interest in research that will benefit commercial strawberry production.
It's really targeting the strawberry research community and farming community. So anybody who's interested in learning more about strawberries and the research that's currently being done on the current issues, it's really for them. It's not really a day to come out and have an ice cream or pick a strawberry. It's a day for people who are serious about strawberry farming and pathology, entomology, and automation issues dealing with strawberries.
With ever-tightening labor supplies, not to mention cost, automation has been top of mind for the strawberry industry for some time, since 50% to 60% of total input costs go to labor. Holmes said the automation stops will showcase a number of labor-saving devices, including an autonomous harvester as well as a mechanical hole puncher for plastic bed coverings.
Automation is a very hot topic, and anything that we can do to relieve the labor inputs into strawberries is going to help. About 50 to 60% of all the expenses in strawberries is spent on labor, and so it's a very labor-intensive crop. Starts with the transplanting process and then extends into the harvest, and that harvest extends for many months, where twice a week the field is being picked. So we're going to have robotic harvesting on display. We're going to have some other devices, such as a hole punch, where we're changing the hole that is punched in the plastic that's made for transplanting so that it gets better water ingress. That's a labor issue too, because the holes are made larger using hand labor. Almost everything that's done in strawberries is done with hand labor, and we're just trying to reduce. We're not eliminating it by any means. We're reducing it. And the degree to which we can reduce it, the better off we are as an industry.
At the entomology stop, Homestead attendees learn about best management practices for ensuring predatory mites work as intended. Beneficial mites are nothing new to the industry, but as living creatures, he said it's important to take care of the mites correctly and then apply them properly.
Predatory mites are about 30 years old, but what's new is what we're doing as far as quality control on the predatory mites. So when you get your predatory mites from the supplier, what are best management practices for distributing those mites, for storing those mites prior to distribution, to getting them established, and to making sure that they do the job? So there's a lot there. You're dealing with a live mite, and that living mite has to be given the right conditions to flourish. And one of those conditions is to have prey, and the prey being the two-spotted spider mite. And so there's a lot of reasons why the predatory mites maybe don't work. And what we're trying to do is our entomology program led by Dr. Sarah Zukoff is looking at best management practices for ensuring that predatory mites work well and that the suppliers are also producing a quality mite that the growers can then put to good use.
Every year at the pathology stop, plant pathologists talk about their trials screening different strawberry lines for disease susceptibility. This year, attendees also will learn about new trials that examine the influence of cover crops, plastic color, and drip tape choices on Macrophemina, also known as charcoal rot. The fungal disease can cause foliage wilting, plant stunting, and drying and death of older leaves. Plants may eventually collapse and die.
We're going to be discussing in the pathology area, we have every year a big trial where we're looking at genotypes and their susceptibility to diseases such as Macrophemina root rot and Verticillium wilt. We'll have those trials again. Every year is a little different. We have different entries under different weather conditions. In addition to that, we're looking at cover cropping with wheat and its effect on Macrophemina. We're also looking at plastic color and number of drip tapes for mitigating stress, which has a big influence on Macrophemina. We have some exciting results there. So there's going to be some really good stuff in the pathology area as well.
Since its inception, the Strawberry Center has followed Cal Poly's creed of learn by doing. That continues at the field day as Homestead about 5 master's students will present research they're conducting at the center this year. In addition, students will be helping attendees throughout the day.
We really like to get our students involved in everything. And our master's students, we always like to give them the opportunity to present their thesis work. And we have about 5 master's students that'll be presenting. It gives them a chance to practice their presentation skills, to become familiar with what that looks like in a professional setting. The industry gets a chance to hear and to see them. It's a really great way for them to be involved. We also have about 15 to 20 students who are always helping with different aspects of the stations, helping the attendees make sure they're in the right place. So they, if they're looking through a microscope or they're doing some sort of hands-on thing, that there's somebody there to ask questions. So a lot of students will be helping in that regard too.
Last year, the field day attracted more than 300 attendees. This year, Home City expects an even larger turnout.
Last year, we had 335 attendees, and all indications are that it's going to be higher this year. Our current RSVP is at 430. We expect that to go be quite a bit higher by the time the field day. We expect it to be a record-breaking crowd this year. We're looking forward to it.
Although the field day is free, attendees are encouraged to register so organizers can have an accurate head count and can have enough food for lunch. For more information, visit the center's website at https://strawberry.calpoly.edu. Then scroll down a bit to the Field Day 2022 article on the far left. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.